Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Muliwa Gavaza, and for today, you join us on a very special edition. It is our 250th episode of the Business Day Spotlight, and to mark the occasion, we are so honored to have the first startup in South Africa to get to that unicorn status. You know, for those that are not in the tech communities, a unicorn is basically a company or a startup that reaches a $1 billion valuation at the current exchange rate. You're looking at around the 14-15 billion rand sort of valuation, and for today that's what we're going to be talking about with Go One. They are one of the world's largest corporate education content hubs, and we're going to be talking to one of their founders, that is Melvin Lubega, who is here in Johannesburg, but as we'll get through the conversation, you'll sort of see and hear that there is a global context that is involved in this business. Melvin, good day to you, and thank you for joining us today.
Oh, thank you very much, Adu, and thank you to listeners as well for joining in.
Firstly, congratulations on the on the unicorn status. I think I'll ask you the question that I'm pretty sure you've probably received the most by now, which is, how do you feel?
No, first of all, no, thank you very much. It's truly humbling, and hearing you convert that number into South African rand, it really, really hits home in terms of the scale. But I think ultimately, it's testament to the work, the full team have been doing over the past few years in terms of the validation. Look, it is a big number, but with it is also a big responsibility. What's quite exciting, I think, about the education space, and even tech more broadly, but even education technology, is that it is a multi-billion dollar space. And so even though we're a large player in the space, there's a very big runway that lies ahead for players in this ecosystem.
Now, to get to that $1 billion valuation, it probably means you guys have been in the game for a while. Maybe you can give us a bit of that context, specifically around one. When was Go One started? What was the actual impetus, for you guys to get into this multi-billion dollar industry? And when exactly did you guys start?
Yeah, it's funny because when we founded the business, I remember none of us were education experts, although we all thought we were because we'd been through high school, university, and had done, more than 15 years worth of education. And Andrew, one of my co-founders, his girlfriend, now wife, was a teacher.
Yeah, no, so thank you so much for that, Melvin, running us through that history. But the actual start of the business, what were the pain points? Because usually when it comes to these founding stories, there's usually a story of, a guy goes to McDonald's and then he realizes that, oh my gosh, they're not serving juice efficiently. And then he goes and he comes up with a solution that becomes a $1 million idea. So what's your story behind, the actual founding of Go One?
I wish our story was as tasty. And so from that perspective, so it was born out of our experiences as co-founders. And so from my perspective, as an example, I'd been finished up my actuarial studies and was working in the management consulting industry. And what became very true is that very many large organizations were bringing on consultants to address problems that could have been actually addressed by them better investing in their people. And one looked at the tools that some of the largest companies were using to invest in their staff. They left much to be desired. And so from that perspective, it's just almost the big companies of, let's say, all the money in the world weren't necessarily investing their people enough. And that for me was paralleled with my experience, investing in startups in the ecosystem very early on from my undergraduate degrees and speaking to some of the startups there, where the small companies felt that they weren't big enough to actually invest in their people adequately. So you had the small guys that said they didn't have enough money to do so formally, and the big guys with the money weren't getting it right. And so for me, that's what actually informed when I went over to the UK to do my master's in education technology when I was at Oxford. Whereas you think about Andrew, his experience was more so building a website development business out of high school and seeing that some of his clients were asking for learning type functionality in the system. And so it was almost the confluence of the different thoughts around how professional learning can be done better that led to the system. What's quite fascinating is as we built out Go One, so when we began Go One in 2015, we were essentially a learning management platform, a learning management system. And, you know, back then, so Andrew was on the product side. I was more on business development and revenue generation. And, you know, it was interesting where selling a platform, which is like selling a bookshelf. And the insight for me was that no one actually buys a bookshelf without wanting to buy books or put books on them. And the same way with a learning platform, no one buys a learning platform without wanting to put content in it. And so many organizations, actually what they were solving for was what are the learning outcomes that can be achieved through interact, you know, very rich learning content as opposed to the platform it's hosted on. And so that led to our transition, which has been over the last 4 years, into focusing more so on our content hub, where now we bring together 100,000 content items into one library. Because the insight for me back then, just for to answer your question, was back in the day when you're demoing a platform to a client with your dummy content, a client would say like, look, we'll wait till we have our own content to buy the platform, or we don't want to show you our content because we're embarrassed by it. Yet that would kill our sales cycle. But what we quickly discovered was we had clients who were using our platform to sell their content, who were typically training organizations, think of CETA accredited providers and RTOs, to customers. And with customers whose core business it was to not necessarily be in training, but they were buying from our other clients. And so through that, we actually then created a marketplace between our types of clients. And what we realized over time was that our content consuming clients actually needed more content than our content creating clients could ultimately bring to bear. And therein presented the opportunity to start aggregating and actually trying to build up that ecosystem, which is our content hub today.
When it comes to something like that, you know, from a business point of view, one might actually just ask, you know, why wasn't anyone else doing this before?
And I think, you know, there are many reasons. And, you know, it's interesting how technology has enabled a lot to take place. I think for us, it's always been a business to business focused platform. I think the reality is this historical mindset of, so you can think of, you know, Airbnb being the biggest hotel without owning any hotels. And those kind of, and Uber being, you know, the biggest transport company without owning any vehicles. And I think it's that historical perspective of one, the importance of, you know, ownership and, you know, almost wanting to create your own content, to deliver your own content, as opposed to how do you bring the best of breed of particular providers or content creators into one ecosystem. So it's more so the acceptance of those models. And also think the friction of doing so was fairly high. Early on for us, there was a lot of technical heavy lifting to be able to bring different content providers into one seamless interface, because ultimately our value prop to our clients is the simplest interface for them to find, book, deliver, and track all their training needs. And so I think also in the past, there wasn't necessarily an impetus from a technological perspective to bring that all together into one ecosystem.
One of the key things that then happens in a situation like yours, if we see you guys get into the valuation that you have, and I guess in the last couple of months, especially the last 18 months, there's been this big growth, this big surge in education technology and education and online platforms. I think outside of you guys, I think Udemy also reached its $1 billion valuation either early on this year or late last year, driven, you know, a lot by COVID. So from that point of view, would you say that COVID was it a driver and accelerator to, you know, the way that we've seen, you know, around the world? Or did you find that you guys had gained enough momentum in that, you know, 2015, 16, 17, 18 into 20, you know, that COVID-19 was just more of just another year?
From a COVID perspective, many companies in the tech space, but even more broadly in tech, have benefited, particularly because there's been a greater appreciation for their value propositions. And so for us, you know, we had momentum that, you know, since inception, we've more than doubled every year, but definitely coming into COVID, there was an acceleration. And so it has been a unique opportunity to, one, add more value for our current clients, but also to think about how we address the needs of new clients. And so it's definitely been something that has almost been a tailwind for us.
When it comes to, I guess, corporate, not necessarily corporate learning, but then learning in such an environment where you have, corporate education, as a corporate education hub, I can understand people educating their people before COVID, but at a time where people get into COVID and they're tightening up, certain budgets, reprioritizing their budgets towards maybe making sure that people have good, at home working spaces, cutting down on marketing and sales and, that type of thing. It's quite interesting that, corporate education, from what it sounds from your point of view, that, things were still good because, one would have expected that employers would have been like, why should people be learning? I mean, you're at home. we need to preserve the cash.
And look, and I think, it's something which, outside in, one would also expect it to take place. And I think there are a few elements that drive the growth of, corporate education or online education from a corporate perspective during this COVID time. So one is that online does provide more often than not a cheap alternative to in-person, which many organizations were delivering in any case. But what you saw was organizations also investing in terms of, not from a paternalistic perspective, but almost as a way to help their staff also cope and reskill them for what lies ahead when you're working from home in a COVID environment. So you may think about being au fait with teams, being able to use collaboration tools, thinking about managing teams remotely. But what was interesting for us, and so we actually, as an actuary, I'm a sucker for numbers. I was sitting with our data science team the other day, and they were saying that every 1.3 seconds, someone completes a course on Go One. And what was interesting during the COVID time, as we saw a spike in usage, was that you would expect the most popular courses to be ones, like I mentioned earlier, how to work from home, how to manage remote teams, that, and so forth. But actually, the most popular course globally was stress and anxiety awareness and management. And again, it speaks to how, during this time that people were dealing with a lot even beyond just productivity and reskilling and trying to remain relevant in their workplaces. And so again, you find that online platforms like ours have the ability to provide also not only that, a hard and soft skills, but also in terms of the mental health and wellness, which I think really came to the fore during this time when one is sitting at home between four walls and thinking of ways to remain, economically productive, but also to keep their minds active. And so from that perspective, we're very fortunate in that regard. It doesn't necessarily go without saying that, during this time, we've had clients who are active users of our platform, but, some of them went out of business during COVID, or many of them cut their workforces. And so from that perspective, it has all been thinking through for us during the time of COVID, how did we stand by our clients? And so for us, it was like, we offered certain courses for free to the public. We partnered with governments to help them upskill their SMEs to be relevant for these times. And it's also about thinking through how does one not only capture value, but also how does one create value? And I think that's where we were able to come right during this period of time.
Are you able to share with us perhaps some of your clients?
So I guess from a South Africa perspective, we have a bias in a few sectors. But some of our clients include Standard Bank, Old Mutual, Pernod Ricard. We work quite closely with RMB. And so a number of clients that we work with in South Africa, I mean, globally, some which others are more familiar with. So we work with Microsoft's a client, TikTok is a client of ours. We work with the UN. We work with a number of governments around the world. Recently launched during COVID, quite a big initiative with the Singaporean government as well as the Australian government. And so essentially our clients do spread across the different ecosystems.
Out of that entire client list, from the big organizations, the one I'm taking away is United Nations. I think that's really cool. But as a millennial, I'm hilarious. Like, these guys are working with TikTok.
I know, it was quite interesting close. And so what we did for our leadership retreat, which we had a few weeks ago, actually each of the leaders around the world had to record a TikTok video to introduce themselves to the global organization. And so that was quite a fun activity.
No, that's actually quite brilliant work from that point of view. So now that you guys are, where you are, and you have, you know, quite a few clients around the world. You've got the valuation. Maybe you can sort of take us through your funding journey, because we did start off talking about the fact that you guys have been valued at $1 billion, and it comes from the Series D that you guys have just done. Maybe you can talk to us about what your funding journey has been like over the years, and where have you found yourselves investing that cash? Is it in development talent? Is it in education? Is it in developing content? Is it in sales? Like, what have you found yourselves having to invest that money in?
Oh, and you know, I just think about, like, you know, fundraising for us has been a humbling journey, because, you know, fairly early on, you know, you would reach out to 100 investors just to get you know, one or two to come along the journey with you. Whereas we're fortunate now, as you've grown and scaled and proven out the validated our model, in our last round, we were fairly oversubscribed, and that there's a lot more interest in the business, than we initially had planned and bargained for. And I think for us, it really goes from the early days. So, initial round we did, during a program called Y Combinator. So Y Combinator is an incubator accelerator in Silicon Valley, fairly well known in the tech space. Given birth to incubator the likes of Airbnb, Dropbox, Stripe, and a few other very large organizations. And so right after that, we did a small round. We encouraged them, Oxford University, and a few high net worth that we brought on board. And ever since then, over the successive rounds, it's always been thinking through, you know, who are the right partners for the next phase of growth in our journey. And so very fortunate to have some phenomenal investors come along us on that journey, from Microsoft being the largest B2B SaaS company or software business in the world as a partner, investment partner, through to Seek, which is a listed company in Australia, which is one of the largest jobs boards in the world, where they have the biggest jobs board in China, Nigeria, Mexico. And again, understanding that link between, you know, education and skills and actual employability, and working there around how do we bring learning into that environment. And I guess more recently, into Iran now, you know, with our last round being led by Madrona, who were the early investors in Amazon, through to now having SoftBank, as well as Salesforce Ventures and AirTree coming on board, particularly, you know, as everyone may be familiar with SoftBank, being very notable investors in firms like Uber and WeWork and others. And so for us, I'm very fortunate to have those partners come along with us on that journey and buy into what we're doing. But I think definitely it's been an interesting journey, just thinking through how one matches, you know, because ultimately a investor is a partner into the business. And so they must buy into the vision, how you want to get there, and also the team that's delivering on that value. And so when you think about how we spend that capital, most recently, our raise, it really is about deepening what we do. In terms of, because look, internally, we say that our goal is to be able to educate and work with 1 billion learners globally. And so, we recently announced that we work with, or we at least have 3.5 million active users on the platform. And so we're very long shot away from that billion. But in the same vein, for us now, it's thinking through, you know, how do we, one, deepen our presence in the markets that we're in? And so investing quite heavily in that organic growth. But also in the same vein, thinking through, other markets where we have seen initial traction or been servicing. So we have offices in 9 countries, but we have clients in over 20. And so thinking through some of those markets and how we possibly build a better presence there. But over and above that, it is about deepening our value proposition, both from a, let's call it supply side. So in terms of, to your point, the content we offer, the content providers that we work with, and thinking through how we enrich that experience in the platform itself, but also in the same vein, investing in our go-to market. And so, you know, globally, we have a strong sense of growing through our partners. And so from that perspective, how do we enable them better and offer them support to ultimately grow the ecosystem for us? And so it really is a blend, but ultimately linked to the same goal for us around unlocking that positive potential through a love for learning.
You know, out of all the investors that you've just, mentioned, including some of the notable ones, especially the likes of SoftBank, I am surprised that by now, Naspers has not come calling at your door. Unless they haven't, we don't know about it.
You know, when you're applying the pavements, I think one interacts with all investors. But that being said, Naspers does have a significant interest in the education technology space. And so from that perspective, Look, whether we'll be seeing them as partners on the journey or we'll see them in the ecosystem, I know they're fairly active.
No. We'll certainly be, hoping, for more of these stories. But I think it also does speak to the fact that with certain types of business models, they do, as long as you are executing in the right way, there is so much potential to actually garner interest from, international people, as long as they can see a sound business model, that's in place. And with that in mind, right, how are you guys thinking around what's actually going on in China right now? Because there's been this big crackdown. Because you sort of have two things happening, around the world. You've got this rise in online education and education platforms because of what's happened over the last 2 years. But at the same time, you have a country like China that's doing a crackdown on education. So how are you guys thinking around some of those things? Because one of the things that's now happening is that in certain corners, people are now thinking that there might be a danger that because of how influential the Chinese government is, we might see other governments, trying to, I guess, follow suit to implement similar policies in their countries. So, is that something that's on your radar? How are you guys thinking about, things like that?
No, and it's definitely something that one needs to think about. But I think with any what one thing I think COVID and has shown us in the pandemic has, whilst it's been a boon for technology companies, it has highlighted the digital divide that exists. And I think even in South Africa, we deal with this in terms of, what does equality mean like? What does access mean like? So, for example, now, with Poppy coming to the fore, again, it's just bringing into question that sharp lens of, data, information, access to a connected environment. And it's in that standpoint, I think many governments around the world are thinking through that. And it's interesting, when you read the headlines around, what's happening in China, often to understand the underlying motives, it's important to come into the detail. And so what you see in the Chinese example, is that what they did actually put bans on were they once said, look, private tutoring companies should be registered as not-profit organizations. And then also that, that there were extracurricular tutoring companies should be banned from going public, so raising international capital or public capital. And then in the same vein, also online tutoring agencies will be regulated. And the underlying piece around that, even though it does tie in with some of their bans on or restrictions on companies like Alibaba and other tech companies, but from an education perspective, just thinking through the public good that education is, it's really, from my perspective, more a inequality addressing play. In that what you see in China, and I was fortunate to do some work in China during my studies abroad and working with some of the governments and leading organizations there. And the reality is similar to what you see across Africa, that China education is highly valued. And that's something which, from a societal pride, a family pride perspective, parents are willing to invest a lot in education, particularly when it comes to investing to get a one up on what their big exams called the Gaokao that actually determines your university standing where you get into. And so what you're seeing is, with all this bolstering of education companies, was that rising inequality from those that have and those that don't have in the ability to actually supplement what they get from core education. And so for me, that's how I view the underlying action by the Chinese government. At least that's for me one of the biggest drivers. Yes, it does have implications for the investment environment and how one invests in that market as a local and international investor. But for us, we're still excited by the opportunity that a Asian and Chinese market does present to us. But I think it's often important, even from a private sector perspective, to never forget the social and public imperative.
And when you look at what's going on in the, South African environment, maybe that's somewhere we can end off for today, is to get a sense of what your view is on South Africa, and what your footprint has looked like in South Africa. Any plans to either expand or to invest locally?
Yeah, so definitely looking to double down on South Africa. I think there's a phenomenal opportunity that exists to transform, online training from a professional perspective. I think particularly as the government focuses on how do we skill the country for the fourth industrial revolution, and I think that's an imperative across the board. But I do think even South Africa as a tech destination or an investment destination is very exciting, just because of the time zones that we have. We have a very strong. We have such a high human capital base in South Africa in terms of being able to source the right skills for businesses that want to scale globally, that for me, there's a very strong case even for other organizations that haven't looked to South Africa to almost take a look at it from that perspective. And so for us, it is trying to, one, double down on the opportunity, and also then thinking through how do we use, again, you know, what we have in South Africa as a base even to scale into other markets across the continent as well, because I think there's a phenomenal opportunity to do so. And I think what I like about, you know, seeing the tech ecosystem across the continent grow is that it is attracting more international capital, where people are saying, yes, one can build a unicorn being a South African entrepreneur or being a Nigerian entrepreneur. And I think that's a really exciting opportunity for both entrepreneurs and investors.
Yeah, it's actually quite amazing. And I like the way that you phrase it, because I think sometimes if you sort of narrow your focus and put blinders on and you look at South Africa just as South Africa, it's very easy to always look at the negatives. But when you look at it within a global context, you then realize that there are so many, you know, different advantages that the country has. The high base in terms of some of the skills, especially, you know, for a technology company, and also the opportunity to be educating people. So going forward, as sort of a parting shot, you know, where do you sort of see GoOne going? And also, in that response, what is your biggest market? I understand with online companies, you know, at least, you know, you can operate online, but just from interest point of view, where have you found the most number of users for your platform?
Yeah, and I actually invert the answer to the question, because interesting, you know, so our fastest growing market would be EMEA, so Europe, Middle East, and Africa. But that being said, in those markets, what you typically find, they are less mature in terms of their adoption of online learning from a professional development perspective. I guess our biggest market by numbers now would be the US and Australia, just because those have been more mature markets. And so what you typically find there is you are often a market capturist. A client knows your product and they're able to switch, whereas you are a bit of a market maker in other developing markets. So definitely seeing strong growth within the region from a base perspective. I think for us, ultimately, in terms of, you know, your question around where do we see ourselves going, it really is about deepening our value proposition and ultimately moving towards that mission that I mentioned earlier around unlocking positive potential. I think to the point you mentioned earlier with technology, there is a global opportunity that, look, us serving clients in, you know, 26 countries really only scratches the surface. And so it's really about just deepening that and making sure that we're investing in our people so we can invest in people outside of our organization as well as we train them.
So that's been it, coming to the end of our 250th episode with Melvin Lubega, who is one of the co-founders of GoOne. You know, very special edition, because they have actually become South Africa's first unicorn. That's a company valued at $1 billion, otherwise at the current exchange rate, about 14 or 15 billion rand. He was just giving us some insight into how the company started, how they came about the pain points, how they've gone about raising money over the years, and the trends, because they started in 2015, gaining a lot of traction, but COVID-19, as with other technology businesses, has done well for them. Biggest markets still remain the US and Australia because of maturity, but he is saying that Middle East and Africa sort of region is the fastest growing, albeit at from a low base, but they're seeing big things from there. Doubling down from South Africa, where they include big clients such as RMB as well as Standard Bank. Melvin, thank you so much for being with us today.
No, thank you very much, Rudy. And also, congratulations on the milestone for this platform.
No, definitely. Thank you.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
$1 billion, that is not a trivial amount. And for us to have reached the stage where South Africa's first startup gets to that valuation is really a big milestone. And I think it speaks to a couple of things. Firstly, the startup culture and ecosystem in South Africa, the fact that there are these startups that are able to to get to that level, to get to those valuations, to get to raise the levels of capital that they've been able to do, because they got to that valuation by raising $200 million in a Series D, in a Series D round recently. That's how, you know, they've gotten there. Notwithstanding the amounts of money that they've probably raised in the past. So by the very least, you know, looking at it from that point of view, it shows that South Africa is a place where people can actually get talent to start these businesses and actually have these businesses operating locally and then expanding out into the rest of the world. It is possible. But at the same time, it is quite reflective of the industries that are doing well right now. Education is something that people have been talking about for the last year and a half, mainly driven by the COVID-19 pandemic. But with the way that things were going, it seems that the pandemic really did just accelerate what was already going on, because a lot of the companies that have benefited have actually been around for some time. You heard with Go One, they've been there since 2015. It's not like COVID started and then they decided to jump onto a bandwagon. They had already put in the hard work years before. They knew that this thing had the potential of blowing up. They understood that this is where the trends were going. They understood this is what the world would be doing in a couple of years. Would all be attending online courses in one form or another. I do remember that when I was in university, just, you know, less than a decade ago, there was so much online material that used to be there, videos, content. There was so much you could do just by, you know, learning online without necessarily having to go to class. Going to class was more for, one, the social interaction, but two, that ability to engage directly with your lecturers, etc. But there was so much capability that we had in place to be able to do things online, and we did. And even back then, we could see what the potential is. And we were in Grahamstown. I mean, I was at Rhodes University, and that's like in the Eastern Cape. One can imagine what's happening in other parts of the world. So big sector, and really good to see that it's something that, no, hopefully down the line, more people gain access, then we will have, you know, the likes of Go One getting to their billion users. Because I think in South Africa, the things that really do need to be addressed, it's all good and well to say that we have a startup in the education technology sector that's reached this unicorn status, when you know, a lot of people in the country still don't have access to the internet, to devices, you know, the money to pay for online courses, that type of thing. So all of these different hurdles and roadblocks do still need to be fixed, you know, along the way. It'll be good to do a catch up with Melvin and his team, you know, after some time, just to see the progress that they've had. But for now and for today, congratulations to the team. And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is a good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.